gentlemen. My name is Ebb Lauk. I am head of Department of Communication at University of Jyväskylä. It is my great pleasure to welcome you to European to the conference of European Journalism Training Association and to Jyväskylä University and our beautiful city of Jyväskylä. You have probably noticed already what a good weather we have ordered for these days. However, the upper limit of temperature was not set, so we don't take any responsibility for possible tropical temperatures that are very extraordinary for Finland. I'm happy to tell you that 2/3 of ESTA member schools are represented here today, and they come from 15 different countries. In Jyväskylä, journalism is taught in the Department of Communication as one of four specialties. In addition to journalism, we teach organizational communication and PR, speech communication, intercultural communication, and we have about 500 undergraduate and graduate students and around 70 doctoral students in our department. Journalism is the most attractive specialty, which has annually over 500 applicants to 16 study places. You find a special magazine on the conference website, which tells you about teaching and studying in the Department of Communication from students' viewpoint. And our students have also made a website for conference, which is part of their coursework. I would also like to point out that the conference is a joint effort of several institutions, the universities of Jyväskylä, Tampere and Helsinki, as well as the regional daily newspaper Keski-Suomalainen and the regional television channel Yle Keski-Suomi. We have also some conference assistants here. Please show up in dark university shirts and they will assist you if you need anything or if you have any questions. And now I am delighted to give floor to the rector of the University of Jyväskylä, Professor Matti Manninen.
Welcome to University of Jyväskylä and to the beautiful city of Jyväskylä. You are really lucky this week is in Finland. Finland is the warmest place in Europe in average this week. So I don't know very much about, or actually I don't know anything about the impact of social media to the journalism, except that when I read or glance through many newspapers, usually in the internet, there's always, when there's some news, there's always, if you were there, send us pictures and information. My background is physics, and because of that, I always, in this kind of occasion, tell a wish to the experts of journalism, that when I read newspapers like this, Keski-Suomalainen or any Finnish newspaper, very much same is true for international on newspapers in any country is that there is of course lots of politics and economy, and in addition to that usually 3 to 5 pages sports and the same amount of culture, but maybe a little news of science, and I would rather read the news of science. Anyway, I will tell you something about the University of Jyväskylä. We have a beautiful campus here in this part of the campus. This is our main building, which unfortunately now is in restoration, so you cannot go in it. Our university is one of the rather large multidisciplinary universities in Finland. There's one really big university, the University of Helsinki, with more than 40,000 students, and then about 5 universities with 15,000 students, and we are one of those. So we are in the center of Finland, and this Jyväskylä is really a university town, if anything, in Finland. So the size of the university as compared to the size of the town is the biggest in Finland. And then we have also other, like higher education, we have School of University of Applied Sciences and other schools. So essentially every third person you meet in the street is a student of either high school or university or University of Applied Sciences. We have 151 years history. Last year we celebrated our 150 years anniversary, and then we started to have this campus musicians, as we call this. We hired a few young people of different groups to have music in the campus in different events, and it was so successful and liked that we continue it still, and can hear in a occasion like this or other places music. So we started in 1863 as a teachers college, educating teachers for elementary school, and this was actually the first this kind of school using Finnish language, because before that everything was in education was in Swedish. So this is Jyväskylä is the birthplace of the Finnish education in Finnish language. We have also the oldest high school, Finnish speaking high school in Finland, or actually in the whole world, here in Jyväskylä, which is still operating. And we still are very strong in education, and for example all the PISA surveys made in Finland are run through our university. In 1933 we got like a university statute, so with a doctor's degree, and then name was changed as a College of Education, and then 66 as we became a multidisciplinary university. So that, and our budget is 2011 million euros. We have about 15,000 students, 2,700 employees, and 7 faculties. These buildings are on the other side of the lakes, and you can see them if you go on the shore and look around. Our main profile is human sciences and natural sciences. In those areas we are strong. We do not have medicine and law of the main areas, but essentially everything else. And our expertise is still in teachers' education and education in general. And we have the only sports faculty in Finland. So if Finland doesn't succeed very well in top sports, you can always blame University of Jyväskylä, because this is the only place it's taught. Like all universities, we are also contributing to various sectors of society, trying to solve these difficult problems of the world, quality of childhood, preventing social exclusion, work ability, well-being, also the length of the working, we have a very strong gerontology research center, and we are more and more putting effort in the multicultural Finland, because Finland is maybe behind of other Europe in becoming more and more international with the foreign workers moving in, but it's coming fast. And then we have a strong IT, information technology faculty, and there the main emphasis is human technology, the interface between computers and people. And then we study water. Finland has lots of water, lake water, and also a little bit energy. University of Jyväskylä is well known for being like a research university with top scientific research. Academy of Finland has, I think there are now 36 center of excellences, what they give long time support, and University of Jyväskylä has altogether six of them. They are physics, nuclear accelerator based physics, biology, and also history and society, and then two centers in mathematics, and actually another one also in physics. We are, in, if you look at the different ranking lists, which I don't so much maybe appreciate, but anyway, in all these major ranking lists, we are among the 500 best universities in the world. And actually, Finland universities in general are quite good, because all the multidisciplinary universities in Finland are in among the 500 best, at least in one of the ranking lists. And this is the whole Finnish education system tries to be sort of has a standard quality. And this also explains the PISA surveys, that all the schools are good, all the pupils are treated well, independent on how good their abilities are. Same goes with universities, that if there's a university in Finland, it once tries to be in a certain level. And if you compare, for example, United States, and Finland is like the size of one state in United States in average, in the population. And if you take any state of university, you can't tell that all the universities in that state are among the 500 best, even if the best universities are in the United States. So this is the difference. We put lots of effort in trying to increase the well-being of students, not only by teaching them well, but also taking part in their other qualities of the student's life. So, for example, we have arranged more and more room in the university premises for students to study or hang around, and also in very early stage try to find out if they have some problems in their like mental well-being. We have several schemes we have started a couple of years ago. Now we are trying to do the same for the workers, meaning all the workers of the university, not only the teachers and researchers, but also including administration and other support personnel. University has several national tasks where we get for which we get special funding from the Ministry of Education and Culture, and these are the biggest accelerator laboratory in Finland. We have an educational research center. This still shows how strong we are still in the education. All the like government surveys on education in all levels, starting from kindergarten to the universities, are usually run through our university, this research center. We have a center of applied language studies, so our languages are specialized in applied languages more than in one specific language. University of Jyväskylä is running a center in Kokkola, a town on the coast, west coast of Finland, where there is a little center mainly doing adult education. And then we have the responsibility of the Finnish sign language research and education, and also economics of education. University of Jyväskylä is also maybe the longest tradition in sort of organized education or export of education. We have a company owned to 80% by the University of Jyväskylä called Edu Cluster Finland, and it has is mainly selling in Arabic countries, but also in China. For example, in Abu Dhabi, there is a Finnish school with 50 Finnish teachers trying to teach the Arabic countries how to reform the school system towards the top schools in Finland, in the world. We are very proud of our architecture. The campus is in three parts. We are now in the so-called Mattilaniemi campus, and then on top, when you walk towards the town, there is a seminary mäki, and on the other side of the lake, you can walk over this walking bridge. There is another campus called Ylistö, and the architects, there are buildings from 1880s by architect Konstantin Kiselev in the old campus. These are from the time of the teachers' college. And then, of course, Alvar Aalto buildings. There are many in the main campus, who is the most famous architect in Finland. And here, this building is designed by Arto Sipinen and some other buildings here. So please take your time to look at the, take also in this nice weather, walk around. So maybe you can cut some of the time sitting here and go to walk around and discuss while walking in the campus area, also to the town, which is very beautiful. If you have time, you can walk around this lake. There's a walking park on the just on the shore of the lake. If you go all around, it's 12 kilometers, and you can go only half of the way. There's a bridge, then it's 6 kilometers. And if you just go around this little corner, it's only like 500 meters. So take your time. But please try to have a nice time in Jyväskylä, enjoy the seminar, and I'm very happy you're here. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We also have the presence of our dean of the Faculty of Humanities, which is our home faculty, Professor Minna-Riitta
This one. Okay, dear guests and colleagues, it gives me a great pleasure on the behalf of the Faculty of Humanities to welcome you all to this ATA conference. We are delighted to have you here to participate in this event hosted by the faculty and one of our departments, the Department of Communication. It's an honor and pleasure to be the host of this meeting. We are living in very exciting times. It's exciting for all the educators, and especially for the educators of journalism, since the media landscape is changing so rapidly all the time. We are all facing demands of using technology and taking into account social media in our teaching practices and to prepare the students for the future professions. The Poynter Institute of Media Studies has listed their recent publication 37 core skills for the future future journalism, and the list is very impressive. It starts with curiosity and the broad general knowledge, and ends with multimedia production skills and the ability to embrace change and innovations. It is typical, at least in Finland, to see technology merely as a tool for communication or publishing. But I think it's very important to bear in mind that technology also creates new kinds of creative learning environments and dynamic learning environments. It's not only a question of using the media skills, but also taking into account the new learning environments which enable very creative peer-to-peer learning, joint knowledge construction, and shared expertise. Thus, it's also worthwhile asking what kind of learning and teaching practices would be best prepared for our students for the future. And I'm quite sure that you are going to discuss these questions and find at least some answers to these problems. Already in this stage, I'd like to thank you all for coming and bringing your expertise into this kind of discussions. And I hope that this conference and meeting will be highly dialogical and inspiring event. I would also like to thank the organizers and all the speakers, and I'm quite sure you all have been doing your best to prepare a conference where we have room for inspirational insights and time for sharing ideas. If the ability to embrace change and innovations is important for the future journalist, for your students, I think it's even more important for the journalism educators to embrace the future and innovations. And I wish you luck with that important work.
I have a text.
Okay. I just put a nice background. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. I'll try to keep it short, less than half an hour. On the evening of February 19th, 2013, last year, I received a mail from Tapani Yuovila. He's sitting there. And Tapani wrote me, "I'm taking contact with you to tell that we would like to organize the ESHTA AGM 2014 and a conference at the University of Jyväskylä, Finland. We can promise good organization and facilities with necessary equipment. The question is, how much and what can ESHTA pay for?" It was the start of numerous contacts with Tapani and later on with Epp Lauk. And I must say the University of Jyväskylä can be proud of them. It's a pity that both officials left us because this was specially meant for them. We are in an excellent room. It's not very hot here, but it is outside. Everything is very well organized and the program looks very promising. The board of ESHTA was very pleased to hear that the theme of the conference would be the impact of social media on journalism and journalism education. And there are at least two reasons for that. The first reason is that the conference focuses on journalism as well as on journalism education. There are many conferences, as you probably know, about trends in journalism, but thorough attention for what these developments mean for educating the new generation of journalists is rare and scarce, far too rare in our opinion. In this conference, fortunately, there will be a lot of attention for how to teach data journalism, social media, television news, and for best practices. What more could you wish for? And there will also be attention for the other side, how to use social media in our teaching. The second reason we were pleased is that this conference is a very good follow-up for last year's World Journalism Education Congress, in which ESHTA was highly involved. The theme of that conference, of Congress, was renewing journalism through education, and it focused on the question how journalism education can play a more directive role in shaping the future of journalism. And there is, in our view, every reason to keep asking that question. In the second half of the 20th century often is called the golden age of journalism, the golden age of professional journalism. After World War II, news production has been booming business. And this success was based, among other things, on three foundations of the mass media model: scarcity of information, the presence of a mass audience, and a monopoly of the media. But as we all know, the golden age is over due to changes in the economic, sociocultural, and technological environment. The economic context nowadays is characterized by what you could call the end of scarcity. Information supply far overreaches the demand, and in the news business, this has led to inevitable price reductions and to a weakened position of the supplier. The socio-cultural context is characterized by the end of the mass public. Society has become more fragmented, more diverse, and more fluid, to use the word of Bauman. This does not fit in the mass media model of the Golden Age. And the technological context is characterized by what you could call the end of monopoly. New interactive and mobile technology has removed obstacles for citizens and consumers to enter the media market as a supplier, and that is what they did. For decades, our job was not that difficult. Schools of journalism could afford to stay in the follower mode. Just follow the trends of the very successful news business, just try to meet the demands of the industry. But the industry is in crisis, or to put it more precise, the large-scale news production within the logic of a mass media model is in crisis. Not journalism. Journalism is a sociological function of society which has to find new ways to do its job in the emerging context of a network society. The network model differs fundamentally from the mass media model. It uses interactive technology instead of one-way technology. It is based on communication rather than on spreading information. And its democratic aim is empowerment instead of delivering top-down political information and political news. The transition from the mass media model to the network model is more than a technological transition. It is more than what people call good old journalism, but with new tools. It is more than old wine in digital bottles. Professional culture, professional values, professional routines have to change too, in the direction of what is called in the literature the participatory turn. This transition is and will not be easy. What our Finnish colleague Ari Heinonen concluded in 2011 is still very true, and I cite: from the perspective of most journalism professionals, the public continues to be distinctively an audience for the media product, even if the relationship has become more interactive than before. Journalism schools can no longer rely on the status quo. They have to be proactive. They have to change from the follower mode into the innovator mode. And the board, and I, because I'm part of the board, of course, think this conference will be of a great help to reach that goal. So on behalf of the European Journalism Training Association, I want to thank the conference team from Jyväskylä for organizing this. And now I'm going to do something very difficult. I'm going to say the names. Manja Pentinen. Yeah? Nina Niskala, there she is, and of course, Ebb Lauk. Please give them a big hand. Thank you.
So please find your seats. There must be enough places to sit. And I give the floor to our moderator for that
right,
part.
Dear EJTA members, Mr. President, and ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to act as a watchdog at this seminar and to follow the deadline. Unfortunately, I'm already failed the situation because 5 minutes late, but we try to manage. So because we have a shorter time and a lot of presentations, I ask the presenters to follow the deadlines of their presentations. And I have already have some kind of fixed strategy for this situation. So when you can see my hand, it's 5 minutes up till then, and when a fixed, there's no minutes at all. So it's nothing to critics against your presentation. It's just a good way to follow the rules. And let me invite the first presenter, Professor Tom Mooring from University of Helsinki, and he's topic is breaking out the tradition, survival strategies for Swedish media in Finland. And it's followed by comments of our journalist professor, Raimo Salokangas. Tom, could you keep it not more than 30 minutes, okay?
I shall do my best to fill all these 30 minutes. I hope it will interest you. Now, thank you first of all for inviting me here. I must say this is an honor. It's also a joy that ETA now is focused on something so weird as a small minority language culture in a small country on a conference of this size and dignity. So we are very proud. Now, what I'm going to tell you is the sad story about us all from a very, very narrow and small perspective. What we have done here in Finland is our school has been involved in a research project or a development project together with all the Swedish media, mass media in Finland, the radio and the newspapers, in order to look at the situation and to try to come up with what is going to happen and what can be done. We have done this during 1 year, and the report is going to be published first week of June. Already a pre-report was published, and the consequences were grim because it immediately led to that 50 journalists were fired from our biggest newspaper. Haven't been fired yet because the negotiations are going on how it shall be done. But, I mean, this is kind of the reality where we are going. This is the abstract, and if you've read the newspaper of this conference, you've read it already, so I won't put much emphasis on this. Look at the last bullet point. Is there a future? If, what does it take? What can other operating in similar milieus, that is you, what can you do? What can you take with you from our showcase? Here we have the Nordic countries. The less bright areas are the areas where people live. The white areas are areas where people don't live. As you can see, there is quite a concentration to the south. Now, if we look at the Nordic countries all in all, and the rector was already mentioning something to this effect, we talk about 26 million people. If anybody of you is from London, only in London you have 15 million people, if you take the greater London area. So we're talking about a very small market. The Nordic system features are actually, if we're talking about the Nordic media as a whole, we can actually talk about a situation that is defined by being small in the market. Which in this situation that we are talking about now, and which Nico, my good friend and combatant from many years, already described very well, we are talking about a situation where change is going to happen, and in this situation the market size and the market features are important. Although what we can say is that the new dispersion of new media in contradiction to, or social media in contradiction to mass media, can operate through a very different logic in networks much narrower. But the typical features of the Nordic media systems are highly developed newspaper market, weakening tradition of political parallelism, which means journalism, professionalism comes instead, and extensive state intervention through a strong public service system that still, if we look at the Nordic audiences as a whole, takes about 40% of the viewing share on television, for example, and a great representation and presence of radio in the media sphere. It is almost time used for radio is almost as much as for television. And then a homogenization resulting in a probable shift from the democratic corporatist system, as Hallin and Mancini puts it, that means the Nordic media system, which is broadly defined by these features, towards a liberal model, that is the model we would see in the in UK, in the United States, in Canada, and so on. This book, published by Nordicom and written by or edited by Greg Love and Christian Nissen, points to exactly the special feature of the Nordic states and some other states in Europe: small
is beautiful in this sense because the small countries tend to have a rather elaborate and a rather diverse media market, although it is even more vulnerable in this situation in terms of the scarceness of bigger audiences that could compensate for losses that the media business does. When we are talking about media use, we are not talking about something small. This line here tells you why there are so few children in the Nordic countries. People are using media, and they are using their time for that. And they are really, really using media at the same level or with the same time use as they are working or as they are sleeping. So it's kind of comparable to the two major activities in life, sleeping and working. And if you look at the distribution here, you can see, as I told you, television is strong, but not so strong, and internet is coming up as a competitor. I'm talking now about Finland, Norway, and Sweden. Denmark is a little bit different because Denmark, as a newspaper country, is not any more distinctly in the same group as these three countries. So I'll concentrate on these three for this part of my presentation. Now, if you compare this to Southern Europe, if you compare this to the United Kingdom, or if you compare this to the United States, what you see is that TV viewing is much, much lower, and other media come in with a much greater share. Of course, internet is growing everywhere, but only in UK or in the United Kingdom or in the United States, only TV takes 28 hours a week. That is more than half of your working hours go for watching television. So this is not a television-heavy culture. It is a much more diverse media culture. Newspapers in the Nordic countries are high up. Japan is number one, Norway and Finland are numbers two and three, and Sweden comes up as number six. In Finland, still, if we look at the audiences in different age groups, on a weekly basis, almost 90% of the youngest still take a newspaper in their hand. And all other groups are over 90%. This is weekly reach. The newspaper business has done a small trick. Earlier they talked about daily reach, same figures. Now they talk about weekly reach, same figures. Looks the same. Yes, everything is okay. Now, this market, this situation, has created something that, for example, Lowe and Nissen, or Curran et al., James Curran and his colleagues, and Barbara Fitch, in a recent study that she did with a comparative study over the entire Europe, has defined as kind of a situation where the media contributes to small social cleavages. We can see that the Nordic countries have a small market, and they also have small social and knowledge cleavages. And these researchers have been able to show that there is really a difference when you look at, for example, the United States, or in this case, UK, and compare to Finland and Denmark. You can see that the audience is more informed in these small markets. They also are using news much more frequently. So you really have a situation of lesser social cleavages and one could say a quality of democracy that is difficult to maintain in these big markets. So there are big benefits in our system. Now, what we see is a challenge. Old people go out. New people come in; they do not anymore come in as we shall see more about that later. As subscribers to newspapers, they also do not come in as viewers on public service television. They come in more in usage of social media, and when they watch television, they tend to watch more entertainment-oriented programming, which has also, in quantities on the market, on the supply market, grown in percentage. We have a huge growth in the media market as such, but the broadcasting is in a way on the level that it has been for so many years. So we see something that is giving kind of a system shock now. This is seen in newspaper circulations. This is Norway. Sweden looks the same. This is not a graph, but you may believe me. And this is Finland. And the trends are pretty much the same. The advertising market is, of course, the big crook in this situation. We see in Finland, for example, a growth in all marketing costs, trend-wise growth that is quite considerable over the years. At the same time, we see a decrease in the media market share, and this decrease is concentrating mainly on the newspapers. If we look at only the newspapers, I will show you in a while, we see a much more shocking picture. The thing that keeps this line almost straight is the growth in internet marketing and the relative stability of television marketing revenues. But first of all, think about how you, many of you are already more than 30 years old, how you used media 30 years ago. What did you have in your house? You had maybe, in Finland it would be typical to have two newspapers. You would have Donald Duck for the children. You would have one magazine. You would have some telephone costs, and you would pay the TV license. That was kind of what the household did away with in a year. In today's money, that would be less than 1,000 euro per year, 700 to 800 euro. In 2014, the same family, two kids, two adults, still married, they have each one telephone, each one connection to the telephone with internet, they have a computer at least, or a tablet at home, they have a broadband to the home, and they pay only for distribution more than they paid for all the media sector earlier. Now, up on that comes Spotify, Netflix, still not a newspaper, two times the YLE tax, that is the broadcasting tax that we have here, because each adult pays a broadcasting tax. Then you may have one newspaper on it and maybe a paid channel or something like that. And you come up to 2,000 to 2,500 euros per year in costs for the family. Now, incomes have grown 50% in this time. Costs for media have grown 100 to 200%. No wonder that people aren't paying for more media. No wonder that the press is going down. Because if you can get so much news and so much other things over the net, why then pay even more than you already pay more than you did before? Conclusion. The press is... This is only the first conclusion. I'm going to continue a little bit more. Where do we have the moderator? The presence of media in the households has changed and has induced change in media use. The dominating media of the past, newspapers, public service broadcasting, they are becoming complementary. This change is irreversible. Nick already said this, the media sector's response to this, also the journalism educators' response to this, have so far been defensive, not proactive. And this, of course, will not hold in this kind of situation. Now to the Swedish-speaking Finns. We are circa 300,000 out of 5.45 million, according to the latest statistics. You can see where we live. These are the yellow and red dotted areas. And this area here is predominantly bilingual. These areas here, the regions where the Swedish speakers live, are predominantly unilingually, or dominated by Swedish language. So there are quite differences in the composition of the Swedish audience in Finland. We can say that there are many Swedish speaker types in Finland. Unilingual persons, bilingual persons who have a core identity in Swedish, bilingual persons who have a complementary identity in Swedish, and these two extremes here are quite different and quite difficult to treat as one audience. So this small community of 300,000 speakers divide in very different challenges for the media. Swedish media would serve those who come for whom the Swedish media are the only source, a home view, but they are also used for by people who are interested from outside, and in this situation we must see that media pluralism and diversity it should represent the many voices at the same time as it must provide a quality that can compete with the Finnish and the English supply in the market. If we look at internet now, internet is everywhere. So the challenge, of course, is only growing. Now, I won't go into this in detail, but this is only to show you that we did an effort to look at research. What does media mean for language? For minority languages, does it have an impact? We found about 70 different research items. That was scientific research, usually peer-reviewed articles or similar, that were addressing the effects of media on language. And the effects were found on all these different in all these different fields. So we can't talk about one effect on language by the media. We can talk about the many effects of media on language. So that's why this is so important for us as Swedish speakers in our community to maintain a rich media landscape. To draw this bigger slide a little bit together, we can say that the research shows that media in a language contributes to language development, to identity, language skills, and to the position of language in society, its status. New research even claims that presence on the digital platform of these languages, that is, the skill of Swedish media, among others, to maintain its position within its audience, is equal to the Gutenberg Revolution. There is a guy named András Kornai from Budapest, a mathematician, who did a prevision out of the trends that we see in society today. How many languages have come over to the digital platform? How many languages have room there, are really kind of consumed there? His conclusion was that within not so many decades, about 245 to 350 languages will survive out of the 7,000 languages we have in the world. Is your language among those? I don't know. Depends on if you speak English or Russian or Chinese. Yes, then it would be. So this is a really, really, really serious challenge that we are talking about, a challenge that is going beyond the general idea of journalism to inform the public for different purposes, democracy, etc., etc. It goes into the very soul of culture itself. Here are just some small statistics, and I will go very fast through them. These are the use of print and the use of print materials over computer, the use of print material over telephone and over tablet. And you can see that the mobile phone, I've left it there, this little gadget is the one that appears at the moment to be the winner, the one who really takes on from this on. And you can yourself imagine what reading over this phone is. It's a little bit different than before. If we look at the resources of Swedish media in Finland, we can see that we are well resourced. All in all, 807 workplaces, almost 600 journalists, more than 200 in local media. Here you have the broadcasting side, and here you have the newspaper side, a little bit, or almost equal. All in all, 85 million euro per year. In share of the entire population, here you have our 85 million euro, here you have the 2 billion 93 million euro that is used by the media industry in these sectors where the Swedish media are active altogether. 4% of the media costs, 5.3% of the population per capita for Finnish, 420 euro, for Swedish, 320 euro. So there's a relative decline or a relative disadvantage for Swedishness in Finland today. I can skip this. This is the YLE statistics showing the same, basically, as we saw already for the newspapers. I'm going to go forward a little bit on the newspaper industry. Here you see how Swedish newspapers are going in terms of readership. The dark blue line on the top, that is all readers. Then you have a breakdown here for different newspapers. Here you see the same for subscriptions. Now, particular for the Nordic countries is that newspapers are mainly subscribed to. You don't buy newspapers in the street except for the evening papers. So these subscription figures are very important to follow. And as you could compare to, if you remember the earlier slides, you see that this is basically the same figure as we see for other media in Finland, other newspapers in Finland as well. It is a quite dramatic decline that started in 2008. Now, don't look at this. You don't want to see it. This is what will happen in 2018 for the Swedish newspapers if they do what they have done before, if they don't change. Now, there are two visions here. The nicer vision, that is the trend line drawn from 2008 until 2018, according to what we saw between the years 2008 to 2012. When we took the latest trend from 2013 to early first 3 months of 2014 and calculated them into the model, we get these more dramatic lines. The upper line, that is what the Swedish media industry will earn. And you can see that in standardized money, this is 2013 currency value, they go from about 56 to about 23 million euro. If this is going to be the case here, they earn exactly the same amount of money they used for distribution and print in earlier years. And here you see the losses, also dramatically bigger. Conclusion: the digital turn will not save newspaper economy fast enough. Cuts, severe cuts, will come. And news will not carry the economy of commercial media for a broad audience, has never done, and even less so today, when most is available for free. And news this Monday, 50 journalists are workplaces for 50 journalists are threatened in our biggest newspaper. What is particularly worrying here is that the new ways of using media is coming in here. This is a generation where about one-third of the audience has totally lost their connection to newspapers or public broadcasting, radio, TV. This is the childbearing generation. Here, the children will be born. Will there be a newspaper on the table at home? No. Will the TV standardly be tuned into public service TV? No. These people will live in another world. They are getting older, and they are taking their behavior with them. This is thanks to Robert Picard, a professor in newspaper and in media economy, where he did this presentation for us in Finland as part of our project. He points to the difference from a mass universal audience strategy through a consumer niche strategy towards a consumer control strategy. Pretty much what Nico already told us about: customer intimacy, personalization, on-demand content services. That's where we are to a great share today. Of course, the old system remains, but with lesser resources and in a decline, whereas this is the growing part. This gives a possibility, of course, for secondary uses of content, prolonged value chain, but it demands change in our operations. Conclusion: new strategies to reach out to the young are required through using young as prosumers, that is, producers and consumers at the same time, integrate them into the production, will also increase their use of the media. And cooperate towards Sweden, which we have the privilege to do, and its popular culture. This can be done here, but what about the Welsh, the Irish, the Sami, and other cultures who do not have a neighbor culture of that strength? Redefine quality as value for the user. Big thing, difficult for journalists to do. Think user as customer. Okay. A little bit of what is media? Watching television. Old people say new media is social media. Young people say TV is social media. Why? Because here we sit. We all have our mobile phones with us, our tablets with us, but we sit together and watch television, at least part of the time. So that's social media. And when we ask young people, what is old media? They say, ah, you must mean Facebook. I would say media means public fora where one may upload something that many can share. Media is a place where one can be with friends and tell them about one's life. Two of our observations in our research. We did some qualitative research, anthropological research as well. If YouTube would not exist, I would not know that Nelson Mandela has died. It was sad. I got to know it from YouTube and from Instagram because there were many pictures, says Virpi, 15 years old. Our anthropologist expert from Sweden, PhD Katarina Grafman, who helped us with this project, has portrayed the young media use in this way. Me in the center. Different, digital sites that are surrounding me, and the communication is very much about control and keeping up with friends. Here, where we go in terms of the new media. You know all this. Okay, this is maybe the last picture I'll show. Maybe I'll show some more pictures, but I won't talk. This is made by Ingela Vadbring, working for MediaWärld and coming actually from Göteborg. And a very good researcher. She looked at the dutiful, the baby boomers, the Generation X, and the do-nets, different generations. How do they use the press today? When they were 30 in the baby boomers, 74% used newspapers daily. The Generation X, 63%. Today's generation, when they are 30 now, 25% on paper, in addition 15% digital. And this generation is going down. So we have a rather dramatic situation where knowledge cleavages are supposed to grow or are consequently going to grow. And Ingela says that we know that it is important for all to follow news. At the same time, we know that fewer and fewer do this. The consequences will be greater cleavages between those who are hysterically on the web all the time seeking for news and those who don't care. Which means we are changing also the social situation in the country. On the plus side, we see that Swedish speakers really want to have Swedish media, if they can. And we see also that digital revenues are growing from advertising in Sweden with more than 20% in the end of 2013, and also with growth in 2014. Digitalization comes first now for the press. Print is considered to be the cash cow. Okay, so what do we suggest out of this? Cooperate on all that is not specific for the Swedish. Raise quality together, pluralism and diversity in covering the Swedish community, think quality as a value for the different consumers and producers, think prosumers, cooperate with civil society, don't sit on your high horses, be humble. There is indeed a severe risk that the new competence gaps emerge and grow. This risk is not isolated to the Swedish language minority in Finland, it is general. Okay, thank you.
All right, we can proceed with comments. Bye, Ryan.
Thank you, John. If you need somebody who knows a lot about minority media in Europe, just ask Tom.
And he got something of his knowledge. I got his slides in advance, and I took up some things. There was this slide about household perspective, about how much money we spent 30 years ago and now. Now we spend three times as much as we did then. And, in the 80s we still had television receiver and a radio, a wireless. And that's all. But now we have a load of different gadgets, and we pay for them, and we pay for using them. And then maybe I'm reinventing the wheel, but I started to think about how is there a sort of rhetoric change in the word for the word free. What is free content in the media? The traditional way of thinking about it is that commercial media is free because it's paid for by advertisements, and we don't directly pay for it. But in the present world, people are paying tens of euros per month for a pay channel and several channels that are paid for. So maybe in the new rhetorics, the free is actually public service for which we pay tax, 140 euros in Finland, which means about 38 cents a day, which is not much. This is more rhetorics than reality, but anyway. There was another slide. This was something that Tom skipped. TV reach is under pressure, radio survives better, talking about Swedish language media in Finland. Okay, yeah, that's true. It's been a sort of eternal question in Finland whether Swedish language television should have a channel of its own, or should it have slots on the Finnish language channels. And, well, Swedish language channel, of course, produces material in Swedish and in the Scandinavian languages, but there is evidence that it's sort of more difficult for the Finnish audience to catch Yle FM and the Swedish language programming could have a larger Finnish audience if they were on the Finnish language channels. And that is probably an issue even now.
It is indeed. What we can see from audience statistics is that all in all, the audience for Swedish language programming has been on the rise since the new channel came. But the peak audiences for particular programs that were popular for the Finnish, among the Finnish viewers as well, these peaks have leveled out considerably. We also see that the majority of the viewers on these channels, the majority of the viewers, not the majority of the audience all in all, but the majority of those who view the Swedish channel are Finnish speakers, because there are so many Finns in the country, and also that Swedish speakers to a very great extent view Finnish television and in parts of the country's television from Sweden. What we see in all Europe, where there are television programming or television channels in minority languages, is that television is so far, and will maintain to be so, the biggest window to the outside. So the outside world looks into minorities through television.
So there are advantages for a totally Swedish channel.
So.
Yeah. So. Okay, well, at least we get SVT.
Yeah.
And then there was this most disturbing slide about the decline of income. And that is really something that we should not have to see. But, well, there it is. Okay.
The feature of the Swedish language press is that it's owned by foundations. In southern Finland, one foundation, and in the west coast, another foundation. And usually, foundation money is more patient than private money. But anyway, it can't give away its money. It has to be profitable. But Tom, you have an inside view about this. Is foundation money really more patient, and should it?
Well, of course, it doesn't. You see it from Guardian as well, or from some other newspapers that have the same situation. There are some in Catalonia and some elsewhere that really do not have to make a profit. The biggest newspaper company, KSF Media in Finland, could make a deficit of 3 million euro per year. Here you see that it is growing towards 20 million euro per year. If it is 20 million euro per year, all the money that the foundation can give out during 1 year will go to cover the yearly loss of their newspapers. And that is, of course, a totally impossible situation. So that is why they have done now these quite dramatic cuts in their staff.
In other words, these foundations are very important for Finnish, Swedish language culture in Finland, because they are funding this, that, and the other. Well, take is 1 minute. Okay, one more thing. Maybe, and this is a question for something for all of you, maybe this situation actually means that the role of public service broadcast or public service media will be bigger in the future, especially for minority languages.
Minorities, because there is a way of getting this money by taxation, as in Finland, this 140 euros a year, or TV licenses, and they prevail. And they make some media contents available, and hopefully somebody uses them. Okay, now Heikki shows me the fist.
Thank you for
your little bit depressing comments, but I wish we get some more positive from our next presenter. Is editor and George doctor for university, Timo Virtanen, and his topic is television news production in the multimedia context. Followed by our commentator, which is there, okay. Timo, try to keep it in 20 minutes.
I try. So I'm happy to be here and talk about situation about the public service side. As the former presenters put it right, we are going to the participatory turn, but from defensive to proactive phase. And I present one example to this turn from the public service media from Finland, from Keski-Suomi, and for myself, I'm a radio journalist, first who learned to took the television news, then I have to learn also the social media and the web. And this, my topic, how to teach television in a multimedia context, is quite absurd, because the television, as you know, it's slowly emerging and going to the net. So we cannot talk tomorrow the same way television as we today, and yesterday's use of television was wholly different than it's now. And some words about my background. In past 18 months I have been working in public service media in Wiley. Maybe you remembered it, Phoenix Broadcasting Service, our national radio television company, and we try to make a laboratory how to do television and do the net same time effectively, so that we can use social media, so we can use the net the right way in a journalistic process. And now I try to tell you shortly what have we learned since 2011, when Wiley Straight Line was first started. But I have to say, when I teach young people here, now I teach mostly radio journalism, but before I also teach television journalism, my problem was when I asked how many of you students have television? One or two. So they are already in the net. This is the fact for the young people. And this is why I try to make two mottos for my presentation, because this how to teach television is quite absurd question, because we shouldn't teach only television. We should teach television way that is part of the palette of medias. There's social media, there's internet, there's mobile net, and then there's television, radio, newspapers. And this whole complex palette is in use every day. But the emphasis on television and newspaper is slowing down, as Tom Morin so greatly put it out. And what we have to learn is, as a teachers, I think, that nobody can really predict the future for television or newspaper or internet, because the changes has been so rapid that, in, for example, 10 years ago, we couldn't really see this ubiquitous media environment we are living now. And we couldn't see this pace of interaction, how it's growing, and how the audience is coming to people who are prosumers. They are producing content by themselves. They are sharing the content by themselves. And they are deciding what is really worth of producing and sharing. Not the media cannot do it anymore. And this is really a problem for old school journalists, as I am, because I really emphasize the autonomy of journalists. I really emphasize that the journalists go to the world and search the topics and then find them and then present it to the audience. So for me, as a journalist, was like a hero from the high horse, as Tom also put it. We did it before, but we didn't do it. We cannot do it the same way no more. Because, how we said, the future of media is on the cloud. As they who have studied from the technology said that everything goes on the cloud and you can pick it whatever you like. And this is also the future of television, I think. The people will go to the video on demand, they look what they want. And sadly, it seems that journalism, news, what we think is a serious content of television, is not really what is interested. This is most interesting. It's the entertainment. It's the shows, it's the reality shows, and etc., etc., which is interesting, especially young people. And they want to share this experience with each other. And they said, this is the media. This is our media. We are using it. We are not consuming media. Because the media is changing to that direction very rapidly. So, main thing is to understand the context of the world media has already changed. So, be sure that the students are already living in the new context, not in the old one, which is more familiar to us. And this is one motto I also try to remember every time. Don't do anything that stops ongoing discussion. It's not really your job. If I try to, for example, defend the old way of doing television or old way doing the media, I will lose my time because it's not really their context where they are living. So how to reach these persons who are more people, more prosumers, more content sharers, and do the television at the same time? And this is the question which I'll try to answer shortly. First thing, what is important, the discussion, the interaction, the two-way street is something to respect for also television journalists. And this is the main difference between the old one. The audience is people we tell things. But the new way is the audience is the people who are real actors in the media. They are using media, but they're also producing the media. So it's no more possible to think only the audience. It is possible sometimes, and it can happen that people are more like an audience and less like sharers and producers. But they are not all the time the audience. And they are more in the active side of this fence. And these two generations meet when I try to teach young people here in Jyväskylä the television journalism or the radio journalism. For example, when I this spring started the radio program, course, I asked how many of you really listen to the radio. Nobody raises hand. Then one student very quietly raised the hand and said, "Yes, I know. I have listened to radio from the internet." So everybody heard this. Is it radio also in the internet? This is the question, because they don't really put it away from the net, the internet, or the text and visual images, or the videos, or the television. It's on the same palette. And this is the main thing to understand also when we educate future television journalists. This is not easy task, because it also means that you have to really open your ears and open your mind and open your professionalism in a way that has never been done before in the history of journalist profession. And this is something which have to be done, because otherwise that what Tom shows, the people who are not really getting the knowledge from the television or getting any knowledge from the media, because they are also doing only the entertainment, only the soap operas, only the real world show. And this is to give constant credit to people as real actors of the social media, of the media. And also I ask myself all the time, what is the purpose to divide the social media and media? Because it's the same media for young people. They, as we show, they say the television is a social media. Okay, let's accept that. Now, something on my background. I see for Bio News, the Direct Line, which is a laboratory project that we try to increase interactivity. We try to increase people's participation in the journalistic project, and we look for internet as a room where we are working, not as a tool, not as a source of information. It is a place where we do the journalistic work. And this is a project has been on since 2011, and now it's ending in this spring, and its innovations are going to share all around in YLE. So now I'm talking a little bit, presenting a little bit history, because this is the old examples from last winter, so not so old, but old, because this whole thing is going very fast to more interactive side. So it's a little bit like I'm telling you the old one, sorry. But now this is the first case which I take out in YLA News and the Finnish media. In last autumn, there was a big discussion about peace in the schools. I think this is probably a topic in, I think almost in every European country we are talking about the teachers, their role in the school and the peace in the schools. So in Alppila, there was a case, teacher take out a student from the lunchroom violently. So it spread in YouTube, it spread in social media, and we go into it in internet. I hope this is working. Now it's, yes. This is in Finnish, but mainly the topic is Helsinki discharge, the teacher who take the power methods and put the people out. This was the article, and it was discussed in the same article. And we do it on the Facebook, we took it on the Twitter, we took it on the social media. We take the tools from there and spread it out and see what happens. And the result was that it was lively discussion. We did, I remember, four TV stories and half an hour web special, which was precisely of this topic. What it means when teacher cannot have, you know, the discipline in the schools. What it really means. Who are the winners, who are the losers. So we take it from the social media to the media, if we put it in the old way. And this is also one, if you don't accept that you have the one of the discussers, people who are discussing in the net, you are not in the discussion. You cannot be just the role of journalist. You have to also be a person in the internet. So be there or be square. It's so tough. And second case, I see Heikki is doing, it's four minutes, yes. The second case is fishing. It's very familiar hobby for our Finns, because you know we have 1,000 lakes, and every other Finn has sometimes fished. It's not so hot for the news, you think, because it's so ordinary. But when we go to the internet, and one of the trainees from here, Jyväskylä, Lili Pukka from this university, looks out the Facebook groups who are eagerly talking about fishing, and no journalist in Finland has in this moment noticed nothing about this discussion. It was full blackout of the media of this discussion. But Lily find it out, goes in the group, start the discussion in Facebook in the group, because she was also invited to it, and make it story from the perspective of famous Finnish young actor Jasper Pääkkönen. Because in the net, the person is the one that creates the conversation. And if it's, for example, Jasper Pääkkönen, he is a person that is well known about every Finnish young people. So they have a, you know, familiar face, familiar person to contact and start the discussion. And also the Jasper was eager fisherman who was protecting the natural in-lake salmon in Finland. So the discussion goes on, and it gets more and more attention on the social media, it gets glowing media on the news media, and this is the result because we just look and go and talk and ask why is this so important. In the behind this was values, change of society, and also the change of legislation, which didn't really was the hottest one, the change of legislation of Finns fishing in the inlakes. Seems like, oh, what? But it wasn't. It was really big in the social media. And this was one other thing to learn from this experience, that you cannot know what is really creating meaning, what is really getting the weight from the social media or the internet. You cannot know. You have to toss the ball and see and be part of the discussion. Then you can maybe have the contact with the discussion and get the real meaning, because there is also this fact that in the internet, which is fast like electricity, fast like light, it's slow media, because people are discussing and this discussion is creating the meanings. And this, for me, as an old school journalist, was internet's online media. It's a really fast media. But it is also slow media. It is media for discussion, media of the people. So, what to do? How to teach television in this context is to really appreciate, respect the real quality of internet, real quality of television, and try to do both in this respect. Because I don't really believe that video reporting in internet can lose some of the, you know, the qualities of the television journalism. No. Why we look poor videos from the net? Why? Maybe if there's a cat, we can do that. But if it's some serious matter, it should be done properly. So television is fast, but net is slow, and there's no easy passage or escape from these hard facts. So this is what we learn in past 18 months in the direct line, and also as a teacher here in university, because I always toss the ball to the students and ask, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Okay. Heik. Thank you.
Thank you for respecting deadlines. So, really hard.